Accession number 10614, reel 6.
Mr. John March, reel 6. Did you make any strong friendships or enemies while you were at the camp amongst the POWs?
Yes, I think this was inevitable because what happened, you would find if you had something in common, which one did with certain people, that one tended to gravitate towards them and talk about the same things, the same interests. They'd open new vistas and I would open new vistas. And so one did tend to have a collection of friends whom you'd never known before. But many of the other officers you never knew, never came in contact with at all. Because bear in mind, there's 2,000 of us there. And some of these, one continued the friendships after the war.
What about people you didn't like? Would you be forced into proximity with them? Or people you...
No, it didn't rise much. I mean, after all, we were with Australians for a time. And, after all, they're not very pro-Brit, you know. They're very pro-Australian and things like this. But, I think that's enough sense. You never hit them, anything like this. Never had a row, a verbal row. You may have had a difference of opinion, especially when dishing out the rations, because when there's 6 or 8 of you, when you open Red Cross parcel, you see, somebody had this awful job of dishing out 6 bits of meat from a small amount, you see. So what invariably happened, if you have any sense, if there's 6 of you, 8 of you, if you want to cut it up, you have the plate that's left. Make sure you don't get the biggest one, you see. Little things like this did happen, you know, or people when they're opening a parcel. Because what used to happen was, if there's 8 or 9 of you in a little room, you could draw your parcels as only if they're available to you, but you could draw them as and when you wanted, depending on the times which are available. No, you could draw them at the certain time of the day, we could draw these parcels.
But I thought you got them from the... via the senior British officer and the German.
Ah, yes, but what happens is this. But they were kept in some central store. Like all my cigarettes, I got 200 a week. I didn't get them all. And when I wanted some, I'd have to turn up to the department where these were. And Germans would... I'd have to ask for what I want under my name. Then the Germans would examine them for contraband, things like this. And it's the same thing. If we had parcels in our own name there, we wouldn't necessarily draw them all out because we'd keep them, say, for Christmas Day or a birthday.
But when you did get a parcel, you'd share it out in your hut.
Well, we did, because we, in this hut, there were 1, 2, 3, 4 Brits and about little in the hut. This is part of the hut. And about 8 of us, and I think 4 Australians, 4 British. Oh, no, yes. You did, no, we no question of, you had other person did this. No, there's no question like some people did. Just act highly solitary. No. What you do is this, you work 8 of you together, and you have somebody 1 week in charge of what little cooking you could do at the hot stove somewhere, or what meals should we have. And then the next one, another one took over.
What rations did you get from the Germans as opposed to Cross, and how was that doled out?
I think it just came to the huts somehow.
So you did your own cooking in the huts?
Yes, well, it couldn't be cooked very much, but there were the odd stove, you see, heated by wood. But I'm thinking of the German stuff where they had their ersatz tea and bread and their soups, stews.
They made them for you?
Yes, and they brought them along to the, yes. And all the Red Cross were additional food, which meant from being permanently hungry, these parcels enabled you to live with not quite so hungry. But we kept the thing quite separate because you could organise things better, 8 of you. Because you knew roughly what was in your parcel, and you could organise your meals accordingly to make the best use of them, you see. Especially if a person's got to have 1 tin of Spam to last them for a week. The stuff's going to be bad at the end. But I can't remember. I'm sure this is what happened. We said draw them as we wanted them, if they're available in our name.
But and, I then know, and then share them.
Yes, because then share them equally. But cigarettes, you see, I could draw them when I wanted to, but I had to swap them for things, you see. Suddenly give me a tin of something like this.
Was there a sort of thriving or sort of black economy in the camp?
Well, there was a little, but not to much extent. Because I was one of those... I was lucky in this respect because 200 cigarettes is far too many to me, because bear in mind, they're the best quality cigarettes. and there's always a market for them, you see. So anything I got, I was able to swap food for them, you see. Then I think what should happen, I just check this food into our little eight of us. Because you can't go, if you have any sense, you can't go behind the back and eat a tin of meat when they're not looking. Because you've got to live with them. So you learn all these things. You get this sense of self-reliance and respect for one another.
As the years went on, how did the camp... Did the conditions get worse or better as the years went on in
No, they got more organised. They got more organised. And I think we very... except very latterly, the only war we saw, of course, was these flying fortresses coming across during the daytime, very high up. And, of course, we could hear them at night time. And occasionally hear sea flashes. But we weren't allowed out at night, you see.
Now, did morale pick up as you realised from the radio broadcast, you know, that was disseminated?
Oh, very much so. You're quite, morale did pick up. And one realised it was the beginning of the end, not the end of the beginning. We realised this very much. And that's where this radio broadcast, most exciting time, when each hut, when I say we did late, but we are not, because what happened, you then have to turn up, somebody's deputed to collect the news from the main man, and then he'd come down to the hut, or be one of it, and then he'd take his turn, going round each eight of us reading the news. Then all the time he had to be protected, in case the Germans did a spot check, which they frequently did.
So what happened as the war came, as the end of the war approached?
Well, as the end of the war approached, what happened was we gathered, this was true, where we were in Bavaria, actually just in Bavaria, in upper Bavaria, actually, over by Ern. And what was happening there, the Germans were gradually encircling that area. And we were told we had to get out. Now, I think the other side, the Brits were coming over there. And so we had to get out because otherwise we'd be liberated. So what happened was, we had all our belongings and had to march out of the camp. And the idea was we were marching away to apparent safety. But of course, there's no safety when you have an encircling movement coming on. And rest, take what food we have, and march with our own feet. And the position was such that at this time, Germany was certainly scraping the barrel. And I remember some of the guards, when this happened, when we had to move out, some of the guards, oh, the dear old ex-German postmen and things like that, old people, there was no ill feeling at all. They were so helpless. They'd have a rifle, you see. We'd carry the rifle for them, because we couldn't escape. Didn't know where we were. We had no food anyway. Very sad. Having these old people aged 60 and 70 who were supposed to guard us, you see. But anyway, we had to march, and we slept. And what happened? We just slept at barns, then gradually moving on towards Japan's safety. But it didn't rise, because what happened was, as soon as we started marching out of the camp the first time, we were subject to a dive bomb attack. Now, several people were killed. Now, I've never really found out. I have an idea. We were dive bombed by one of our allies who were unaware there's a prisoner of war camp there. I do not think it was the British, but it was a support of the British. And we really dive bombed. Oh my God. And fortunately, there was a ditch at the side, and I got very good at going to ditches. And I always remember this dive bomb, it was quite frightening. I got in the ditch, and you look over quietly, and you see the flaming bullets bouncing on the tarmac of the road we were walking on. And indeed, after the raid, numbers were wounded, a number were killed. So we had the job then.
And that was at the start?
As soon as we got out of the camp.
And then this is when you were carrying the old German's rifle.
Oh, yes.
In a barn.
Oh, yes. And what happened was, several people were killed, including the old German. And I remember what we did then was, we all marched back to the camp. Things must have got row. We had to go back to the camp. And I remember some of the wounded were killed. We have to go back to the camp and take a door off, its hinges and go out and use that as a stretcher to bring our dead colleagues back or the dead Germans back to the camp. Which, and the incredible thing was there, I've never forgotten when we walked past there, their old people, dead old ladies, almost in tears, seeing us walking back, because they were affected in this respect. Then it was tried after a day or two, we only march at night and sleep by day.
And this is when you had the, you helped the guards out.
Oh, helping the guards, nothing. I mean, you felt so sorry for them.
Yeah.
I mean, it was probably about age 60. Poor fellow. He's in the reserve. And so what happened was, we used to sleep during the day, and gradually we're getting on towards, I think it's a place called Moosburg, where eventually the American army caught up with us, General Patton's army, caught up with us.
You hadn't been at Moosburg long then?
No, I'm trying to think how we got there. No, we got in the Moosburg area, I'm sure.
You weren't in the Moosburg camp then?
No, but I remember the name Moosburg, because I'm sure that's where we flew back, to Reims or somewhere. But I'm trying to think. No, when we did this several days, marching, as I say, by night, and resting by day. And then it's quite obvious that the Germans were getting further, and the Americans became closer and closer and closer. And eventually, at one camp, I think, was it Moosburg or some camp? I think there's a big staging place with a lot of prisoners of war there. I can't remember. But anyway, we realised things were happening here because the Germans. And, yes, because we saw the men came into the camp. And I've also never forgotten this. One of the most exciting men I've ever had. And I can't recall the exact incident. It's because after. Yes, eventually we realised things was happening. And this place. The Americans came in, and of course it's exciting, most excitement, and plenty of being free at last. And the great thing I ever had was, in with the forward American troops, there were some Blasio women dealing out hot dogs. And that's the most magnificent thing I ever had in my life. In freedom for after 5 years. And then, of course, what happened was, we had some camp at Moosburg, and I always remember the Germans, how disciplined they were. All the Germans lined up. Every one of them, were quite a lot about this time, and lined off and gave themselves up. And then we were moved to somewhere, to an airport, I think at Moosburg, near Munich, and we were flown to Reims. And I think we got to Reims the day General Eisenhower was signing the armistice. That's right, Reims then. And then, of course, we were eventually flown.
Were you well treated by your liberators, the Americans?
Well, no, we were in the. Well, yes, but we were in. We went by bombers. We were in the. There are no seats in these planes, you see. And, the treat is. Well, yes. But I think it's so happy and excited about being free. But I remember. I'm not sure whether it was from Munich area to Reims or from Reims to Great Britain, the south coast, because we in it's from Reims to Great Britain. We in Lancaster bombers, and we all had to, all the bomb racks were taken out, and we had to lie tightly and tightly together in certain positions so the plane would be safe. But it's quite an exciting time getting from Munich up to Reims and Reims to London. And that was, I think, excuse me, on May. Then when it was. I'm not sure when the war ended.
May. Or the war in Europe. And what happened when you got back then to England?
When you got back to England, you see, I was bunged up to BDLI. Excuse me. I was given a voucher. My wife and daughter lived with her parents near Durham. And I think by this time I'd been in touch with him, you see. And traffic conditions in England were not exactly the best at that time. And I think I got I eventually got to Darlington by train and got a bus or something to Durham, or a train, and they met me there. You see, that's what happened. And then, of course, I was kept on in the war, naturally, but being the leasing was governed by first in, first out. In other words, I, being in the war at the very beginning, was demobilized very, very quickly. I think I just messed about at one or two staging places, you see, but I was out and free again.
And did you had your experiences in the army and then later on in the prisoner of war camps, had they affected you much as a person, do you think?
Not to my knowledge. I've often asked this question. I would say I'm a better person for it. Learning to mix with these people, realizing what different ideas people have, different outlooks. There's more than one person in the world. And again, the other great thing was I was enabled to have get a much wider experience of what life is all about. In fact, I'm sure in one of the ways there, that's where I first come to love. I love poetry, but I think it was heightened, my love for it there, being a prisoner of war, because of the odd poet there. One pick was John Buxton. He was a very fine poet. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're very lucky. And I think that I always think of the good things. You never thought that you'd never get home again. No, you never thought, will I get home again? You forget about those things. You must forget about them. Just hope and hope. And probably what I'm talking about here makes it seem so easy. It's not really easy at all. But I think if you have sufficient, I must have had resilience. But I'm sure I'm a better person for it.
Mm-hmm. And how did it affect how you felt about the Germans? You'd been a prisoner, their prisoner for 4 years. Did it give you any lasting grievance or opinion?
No, I'm sorry. I'm one of those persons who... No, I'm sorry, I can't take that view. They're just doing their job, and we were doing our job. And you never heard me German bait. No. I mean, it may not be our scene, but bear in mind the Australians aren't our scene, perhaps. But I had no hate, real hatred. They're just doing a job. I mean, bear in mind, at this camp, we're very lucky in a way. There's 2,000 officers. We had Canadians there who came for the day of parade. We had a number of Maori officers there, who you like very much indeed. Now, the Maori, apparently, I said, there's a great lot here, and I was told that what happens is, in New Zealand, the Maoris have probably got the most balanced way of treating a national family, sorry, the national people there, to immerse them, emerge them into the government or the country. And indeed, but we saw the best of the Maoris, because we had the Maori officers, who were great types, excellent types. And we also had some Rhodesians there, Africans.
How did you feel about the DLI when you left? Did you consider going back into the territorials? Or?
I did. I went back, but we then became attached to parachutes. And my wife thought, look, you better give it a rest. You've been away long enough, you start learning how to jump out of a parachute, something might happen to you.
So when did you pack up
the... Literally within a few months. But of course, I still attend regimental dinners in Newcastle regularly. But I don't have much contact now with them. I mean, I know people... I mean, we have there's a brigade dinner. And there's a divisional dinner, which, as you were saying, Charles Burton Taylor goes to. The divisional... And the 151 Brigade, and yes, regularly, but I don't go to those. I go to the old regimental dinner.
The 9th.
Battalion dinner, the 9th dinner. And, of course, fewer and fewer of us now. Because many of the ones who joined later, I never met at all. Because I was a prisoner of war.
Thank you very much.